Panic Pod podcast, a podcast dedicated to talking about all things anxiety. We've got to 10 episodes, Emma. Thank you for putting up with me, and I'd equally like to thank myself for tolerating you two.
Oh, I thought you were going to say yourself for putting up with yourself for this long. Because that's the whole reason I'm here. We should say that, you know, you were going to do the Pint Pod all by your... Panic Pod all by yourself.
That was a reference to an open mic that
That was
I once
a Freudian
did.
Slip.
Yeah.
That was a Freudian slip of
I first met Ella when I ran an open mic in Salford. And Ella's an amazing musician, and she came in and shut the whole pub up. And if you can shut a pub up in Salford, you must be pretty good.
That was a slip. But Panic Pod, 10 episodes of you couldn't stand your own voice at first, and now you can, because I'm here with my Canadian accent. Isn't that right?
Oh yes, brilliant. Yes,
balanced it out. I'm like the pH balance to the Mancunian accent, so that people from both sides of the Atlantic can tolerate this podcast.
Yeah, it's the only reason you're on. It's to have a broader spectrum of audience.
Yeah. And everybody in Canada only listens for you, obviously, because I'm just...
Oh, really? Today, we're going to talk about social anxiety. What comes to mind when I say social anxiety? What do you think that means?
Parties is the first thing that comes to mind. But I was thinking, I'm really excited for this one today, because I was thinking a lot about social anxiety this morning, and I think I have some things to throw at you as like ways that I've dealt with social anxiety, as I want to get a therapist's advice on these kind of practices that I've used in the past for social anxiety.
Cool.
But yeah, for me, I feel like I can understand social anxiety probably the best of the different types of anxiety that we talk about on this podcast, like agoraphobia and health anxiety and all the different types of anxiety we talk about. Social anxiety can combine loads of things that we've talked about in this podcast before, like intrusive thoughts and judging yourself and having false comforts and all sorts of stuff. But it can be the trickiest, I think, because it can link so much to our identity and like how we reflect our own worth, I think. That's what I found the trickiest with it. So yeah, it's a very complex one, but maybe every anxiety is when you look at it specifically, independently.
I think that's really well put, and I think you're absolutely right. We can feed in everything that we've kind of been talking about so far, looking at anxiety conceptually, about how social anxiety manifests. Because, yes, social anxiety requires two kind of fears. One, having the anxiety and our relationship with the anxious response. But secondly, also, yeah, it's about identity, and it's about kind of what we perceive to be a threat. You know, if people's opinions are a threat, then we might, you know, someone having an opinion of you might be a threat to you, but it's not necessarily to me or to Joe Bloggs. And we can look at that in today's episode. To define it, social anxiety is excessive anxiety in social situations, or leading up to social situations, and even after social situations. It's not just someone avoiding someone because they're afraid of judgment. It can actually really hamper people's lives. So from an extreme point of view, people with social anxiety will avoid contact, will try and avoid going to social situations, whether it is a party,
yeah,
like you said.
Ask as well, would you consider stuff like worrying about texting, worrying about someone's going to message you back, under social anxiety?
Yes, 100%. Because I think what links social anxiety is the word, what are they going to think? So here's an example, and let's use the party example. So I've been invited to a party, but I have huge social anxiety. Immediately we have friends What If coming. Worried Voice. Worried Voice says, oh, what if people judge me at the party? What if someone has a conversation with me one-to-one? What if that person sees that I'm anxious? What if I can't hold a conversation or even start one? What if someone asks me something that I don't know and then I look stupid? What if people see that I'm anxious and then I have to run away and I look stupid? You mentioned false comfort before as well. Like, what if I freak out? Maybe I need to know where the exit is. Maybe I need to know where the nearest toilet is. And I've worked with people that do this, particularly social anxiety in restaurants and things like that. They actually Google the restaurant beforehand so they can get out of looking silly.
An excuse of what they might have to run off to and all sorts of things.
Well, that's the anticipatory anxiety. That's just step one. When we're there, we got an anxiety of, say we're in mid-conversation, I start talking to someone, what if this person isn't interested? What if this person is pretending to be interested in me? What if this person is reading my thoughts? What if this person knows that I secretly aren't struggling to listen and I'm vulnerable? What if they're just looking for an excuse to leave the conversation? That's what I hear a lot from clients and some friends as well. And then that's only stage two. Stage three of social anxiety is after the party. I may go home and go, what did they think of me? Did I say something wrong? Was that an ill-timed joke? What if I offended someone? What if they never talk to me again?
Yeah, that one can be just relentless. Like, there's no end to that third step. And that's what some people fear so much, is just that my own mind won't be able to shut up after the whole thing has gone down. Can be, like, a huge deterrent to go to the party. Even if you're like, the party's going to go fine, but I know that my brain's only going to dwell on the most negative things that happen, like, you know... brushing against someone and bumping into them, maybe they spill their drink a bit, and that's the only thing that you can remember about the entire party. It just goes on loop for like the next 3 days, just like, oh god, is his coat okay?
That's pretty much what you do at parties. I've seen you, you know, just brushing up against people and knocking drinks out of people's hands.
Yeah absolutely. That's but I think actually in one of the most recent ones that we've recorded, I was saying how I had like an awesome reconnection with a friend back in Calgary, went out for drinks with him. The only thing that I could dwell on when I was hungover the next day was just having slipped on the ice when we were leaving, and I like could not think about anything else from that. And it was such a nice conversation and everything, and it was like, you have to keep this in perspective, like that's a very human thing. No one cares, you know. My cousin when I was very young, actually, like there was literally this one night, I just want to paint the picture for anybody listening to us, right? So we're at a cabin in Canada, like the middle of BC, and it's a beautiful night, and we're all like sitting on the edge of the porch looking up at the stars, dead quiet, beautiful. And it's one of those moments where everybody's just kind of in their own, we're only like, you know, 14 or whatever, but we're all in our slightly imaginative ponderous states as these like 14-year-olds, and one of my cousins is like, you know when you're walking down the street and your friend trips on like a crack on the sidewalk and you just go, oh, that's no big deal, and you keep walking, but you know if it happens to you, that's like all that you can think about is that you've tripped on the crack, and that you think about that for like the rest of the day. Isn't that weird? And he just had this very like dissociative moment where he just realized that like he didn't have to be embarrassed about that type of thing. And it's true, you don't. Everybody does silly stuff, like we do silly things all the time at parties, but the dwelling on it can be like the thing that people fear the most. Really, I think
I agree. It's perception. It's always perception. And I think a lot of, ultimately, with social anxiety, the main reason I think why we struggle is down to esteem and how we value ourselves. So Carl Rogers, the great humanistic psychologist, who kind of pioneered person-centered therapy, he came up with a term called the organismic valuing process. And basically that means how do we value ourselves? Do we value ourselves internally? Or do we value ourselves externally? Organismic valuing process. And if you've got a valuing process that's entirely external, you're looking externally for that validation or that value, or for someone external from you to tell you that you're enough. And if the ball's entirely in that court, if you kind of value yourself entirely on other people, then your anxious response is going to go bananas when there's a threat to that. So if everyone has the power to judge you, and then you trip over on the curb or the sidewalk, as you would say, and you might not care, but you know someone else might, and suddenly the anxious response is going threat. So for me, I used to get name called and bullied in school quite a bit. I know, right? Believe it or not, and that conditioned my amygdala, my anxious response, to kick off, because all through school I always thought it was about impressing the bullies to have value. Only since leaving school did I realize, well, that's just stupid. But that, it's that same thing. But I know people, and I work with people, like adults, who still adopt that mindset where I need that external validation, whether it's from people at school, whether it's to please parents that weren't necessarily perfect, or whether it's to keep safe, to not be bullied, to not be a threat. So social anxiety, idealistically, you should go into a party and go, right, who's not boring? Because this is what I do at parties now. Not that I get invited to any. But if I go to a party, I'll say to myself, I wonder who's interesting here. Because I don't really want to get caught, thrown into a conversation about such and such.
But that's it sounds like you're really flipping it from what is going to happen inevitably to what opportunities can I find here?
Just for me, because I'm quite happy with who I am going into the party. Not always been the case. But the socially anxious person will go in and go, ooh, who do I know? What if I've done this? And they're just answering all the what ifs that worried voice throws up. I don't know. Can you relate to that? Can you, at any age?
Yeah, no, that for sure makes sense. So one of the things that I wanted to kind of throw at you, thinking about this on this topic, is because of the fact that I've had so many conversations with friends of mine over my years as a teenager and in my early 20s, and even lately, always talking about stuff like social anxiety, because I spent a lot of time in that age that you're talking about, like sort of high school or teenagehood, like alone but focused on stuff, usually making music or doing something like in solitude. But I was thinking about how when I started to really go, okay, I want to examine this, I want to get over social anxiety, this is getting to a point where it's causing more like harm than helping my identity in my life right now, so what can I do to get over it? At one point, a friend of mine, and this was right after I just moved to London, we were Skyping, and he was encouraging me. He's like, you can just be whatever you want, because you don't know anybody right now. Like, why not just like go into a shop one day and be five times as confident as you feel like you are normally, or you feel like the you that was with other people or other friends was before. Just be like, hey, I want a goddamn chocolate bar, you know? And that was the
what an aggressive way to request the chocolate bar.
well, we were using more expletives than that. But, you know, what if you just, for your own experimentation, basically, like, just try doing something that gets out of your own comfort zone, so you can try a different identity just to see if that helps, like, propel you forward to, like, meeting new people and essentially having more fun. Because like you're saying, what if you looked at the party or whatever social situation as like, this is an opportunity for me here, and I actually don't care what people think about me, so let's discover something. And maybe the only way I can discover something is by putting on a bit of an external thing. And to be honest, and this is where sort of I wanted to bring this up as maybe a thing to discuss, I don't know if this is a method that you've ever brought up with anybody else in therapy, like literally have not broached a subject with you prior to this podcast, but like, can it be helpful to do what I'm starting to refer to as like temporary distancing, where you sort of go, what kind of person could I try being right now just for this like 1 or 2 hours at this party, just to experiment what it might be like to try something different in this social situation. And I've been thinking about like when it's healthy to do this sort of thing and when to apply it to different parts of my life. And honestly, it feels weird to say this because it is kind of like saying that you're kind of faking something or you're putting something on, but just for me, totally truthfully, totally honestly, like when I hit those points of I really want to break past some sort of social anxiety, it really helped when it was those parties where you know zero people and you have the opportunity there to go
like reinventing
okay what
yourself.
Do I want right now, yeah, and to kind of go like maybe even just for tonight I'm gonna be, you know, 10% more like this person I know, or 10% chattier, or it may, but even by kind of by consciously putting something on, it's like you're giving yourself permission to be different. I guess. Well, does that make any sense?
I would ask why that's on the assumption that who you are isn't that person, you know. If you're coming in with that kind of negative self-concept, I mean, I've noticed that my friend is confident, so at this party with people I don't know, I'm going to try and practice being them. Yeah, okay, there's an element of that's cool, and what's nice from a cognitive anxiety perspective is that you're practicing being in front of people without avoiding and telling the brain that it's okay. So you know when we were talking about intrusive thoughts, the worried voice, false comfort stuff, that's cool. But on the other side, I'd look at it and go, first of all, what's up with you going into that party? You don't need to be chatty or whatever. Like, even if you're quiet, even if you're an introvert who doesn't really like socializing, you should like who walks through that door. I got a mate, it's going to sound weird, I got mates that will sit in the corner and just happily not talk to anyone, but they're happy. I'm like, do you want to chat to people? They're like, nope. Why are you anxious? Like, no, I just don't really fancy chatting. If it occurs naturally, I'll chat. Whereas you've got like a lot of people that are motivated by a should, an unhealthy should sometimes. It just depends what your intentions are, I think. It depends what your intentions are. If you want to practice and play around and try and find out who you are and yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. It's fun, isn't it? It's a party. You can do what you want.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good distinction to call out, because I think that, yeah, people who are happily identify as introvert, that sometimes gets conflated, where if you're quiet doesn't mean that you're shy, or it doesn't mean that you're uncomfortable in social situations. Some people are, like you say, perfectly happy to be in social situations. They're just quiet people generally. I guess, and again, it's really cool for me kind of trying to pick it apart again and think about why this might have served me in a time that it did, was just to think that people who are, they feel like they're somehow stuck in between, people who are introverts for a large portion of their life, but then realize that that introvert version of themselves just doesn't serve those social situations, that's when I think it's healthy to think, yeah, I have my introvert self who's like this, and then once or twice a week when I'm in these sort of social situations, this is when that same person just doesn't exist in both of those situations, maybe.
I think it's great, but what you're saying there is that I think you've already got that kind of confidence to do that, which leads kind of nicely to the topic of, we won't spend too much time on it because we'll do a whole episode on it, but the topic of imposter syndrome. And imposter syndrome, I mean, I hate the word syndrome, but let's just go with it. Imposter syndrome is, in a nutshell, I'm going to get found out in a second. So if you're really anxious and you struggle with your esteem a little bit, or there's esteem issues or self-value issues that you've not quite worked through, if you take that kind of mentality into a party and you've gotten zero self-confidence, your anxious response might even fire off 10 times worse. You know, because then you're going to have a, what if you get found out? They're going to find you out. This is an act. They're going to find you out. So it if you struggle a little bit with it, I think that's a great idea. Go in, play around. I do all the time. I never tell anyone I'm a therapist at parties because you end up ruining your own party because people sitting down, you know, so you say, you know, and I really respect people sharing stuff and trusting me with their stuff, but it's going to ruin my party, you know, if I'm sat there listening to people giving out therapy or just listening to stuff that's not kind of reciprocated. I think it's an interesting one, actually. It's got my brain kind of going.
Yeah, and I was just glad to, like, bring it up and kind of get your perspective on it, because I think everything you're saying is so true and is giving me a new perspective on... I kind of just wanted to pick apart, like, why it might have served me. And it's sort of along the philosophy of one of my idols, who is this very funny, like, improviser, comedian, musician, Reggie Watts, once said, if you're not happy with your reality, create a sub-reality to exist within it, or something like that. And I kind of like that once in a while, of just like, if you're under so much pressure about being or getting through a situation like that, I guess what the temporary distancing thing that I was thinking about was just, don't be afraid to play with your personality. But I guess it comes with a huge, like, asterisk caveat to say, as a means of discovering your true personality, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, so it's, it does. Like,
it's
really
okay to
does.
Play with those situations. Yeah.
I think, and actually, as you're talking, it reminds me of when I was studying humanistic psychology, and particularly the works of kind of Rogers and stuff, two prevalent writers called Mearns and Thorne. I can't remember their first name. I think it's Dave Mearns and Dominic Thorne. I'm not sure. Apologies if they ever hear this. Mearns and Thorne talk about this concept of configurations of self, which I love, because we don't have, they believe, we don't, they, I mean, there isn't just one rigid, static version of our personalities, is there?
Like, right.
Like, me getting up first thing in the morning is not me out in Manchester, probably a few beers deep, dancing with my friends, is it?
Is why you don't give out therapy at parties.
Exactly. Me talking to my grandma is not the same person as me talking to my best mate who I've grown up with since... But I would argue it's still the same person. So this is where Mearns and Thorne talk about kind of configurations of self and what it means to be authentic. I think it's okay to practice and work on different configurations of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the aim is to be at a party, to kind of work on your social skills, see how far you can push it, see how far it is playing around with stuff, see what you like, I think that's very healthy. I think...
long as it comes from a place of, like, caring about yourself and...
Yes. And if you've got other configurations that you're happy with. Well, I love my configuration of self when I'm sat or led down on my bed reading a book or messing around on my phone and there's no one around. I'm quite happy to do that. You know, I don't doubt that. You know, I don't doubt that. But maybe there's elements in my life that I think, well, maybe from a professional point of view, I'd like to look at that configuration of myself, you know? I think I do. I just love that. I remember it sticking out when I was studying, and it's like, you're still authentic and what Rogers calls congruent, even if you're kind of adopting different configurations of yourself. And that kind of, I do mention that when I work with people in my practice with social anxiety, it's like, you don't just have to be one person all the time. You know, you could be a confident person with 2-3 friends, and quiet as a mouse at a party. It doesn't make you authentic. You just might not like that. It's okay.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, well, thanks for... I'll add those authors just to the footnotes, just so we have that if people want to do some more reading on it. But I like that I think we're always juggling with that when it comes to our verbal selves, like the people that are... in contact with other people and ourselves alone. That's the whole sort of introvert extrovert balance. But then within your extrovert balance, it's like, well, you hang out with nieces and nephews, playing with a bunch of kids might be very different than your professional self, but those can both exist as you, and And maybe the self is just that amalgamation of the configuration of self, like,
yeah, all definitely those things working together. When you're looking at social anxiety from a cognitive behavior point of view, what advice would you give, Ella, to someone who perhaps has been avoiding going to the party? And this party is a microcosm for anything social that you're avoiding. So if you're at home listening going, stop banging on about this party, I don't like parties, replace party with anything, whether it's work meeting, mm-hmm. appraisal, mm-hmm. seeing family, meeting up with one friend who you've not seen for a while. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. In fact, let's change it up then. So let's say you've been really socially anxious about meeting this one friend you've not seen for a while. And you're in mm-hmm. stage one, the anticipatory anxiety. What if they see that? What if I'm anxious? Mm-hmm. What if they're not interested? What if I'm boring? Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
We've had all those thoughts. What would you advise that this person does, Ella, given all that we've known about the like pathology of kind of anxiety and how it works?
Yeah, well, we've done this a few times to close the episodes of sort of like, let's talk about the type of anxiety and take it apart to the rational high level solution. And this one's a little bit different because it's something that I have experienced a lot. So I would say, having been in that anticipatory phase or state before you're getting ready to meet someone, I find it useful to, it's like as you're putting on your makeup or as you're like, you know, picking out your outfit or whatever it is that you're going to wear, you get those moments of that fear. What if they see the real me? What if I say something silly? What if, what if, what if? And I think it's useful to just acknowledge that voice and that voice keeps coming up. And that way you don't have to feel like you're trying to block it with this big brick wall. Mm. But every time that that thought comes up, I think it's good to just go, how am I supposed to know? What if? I'm not there yet. And I'm not going to find out until I'm with this person. So there's nothing to worry about.
Mm.
Is really what's helped me in those situations. Just to go, okay, yeah, I'm clearly very excited to meet this person. And maybe that is just an anxiety, excitement cocktail that's going on right now.
Yeah.
And maybe those thoughts are coming up just because, you know, it's just as a natural result of excitement, but that excitement is kind of turning over into anxiousness a bit. And so I think acknowledging that that thought is there, but remembering there's nothing you can do but be in the present. So you can't do anything until you're in the present with that person. And especially
see,
if it's
and
a,
see how it goes as well.
A
yeah.
friend, it's like you can't predict anything.
Of yeah. course. What's going to be tempting, but you're not going to do? So you're feeling anxious,
well,
you're
yeah.
having all
so
these
when,
what ifs about seeing this friend.
Yeah.
What's going to be really tempting to do, but you're not going to do it?
Yeah, well, let's remind people what is false comfort. So false comfort, as I hope I get the definition right here, really anything that you might do to attribute the relief of your anxiety as a result
like
of sort of doing something. So like
or anything
in the social situation,
full exposure, anything that stops full exposure,
anything that
well
stops full exposure,
answer.
That's a great way to say
as
it.
Well as your answer.
No,
though,
yeah.
Because you're
yeah,
right.
Because yeah. To kind of numb yourself from a social situation, it would be very common. You're going to smoke, you're going to drink, or you might try to sort of numb those feelings of excitement that you're having with the
really
person.
Didn't really think of it like that, but yeah, of course. That's definitely
but
a false
comfort. But false comforts can also be having, checking your phone so that you're maintaining some sort of look of being like relaxed or a little bit more chilled out or not so in the moment, or just anything that you would rely upon to go, oh, that's why I wasn't anxious, is because I had that thing with me. Mm. If there's anything that you're attributing the success of a meeting like that to, then that would be considered a false comfort, or as you say, anything that blocks exposure.
Mm. Brilliant. Yeah, and the ultimate false comfort would be to avoid. So if there's people listening at home that can relate to the content we're talking about regarding social anxiety, it's better to avoid. So people will be listening, they'd have cancelled plans, they'd have avoided it, they'd have used the little false comforts. I know people that have had to, you know, self-medicate sometimes, get a bit drunk, do drugs to try and make themselves mm-hmm. appear confident, to mm-hmm. quell the anxiety and all that. And you can do all those things. But here's the thing about exposure, because when you do use full exposure towards the anxious response socially, you are going to have the symptoms of anxiety. So you are going to shake. You are going to probably take a few deep breaths. You might sweat a little bit. You might do all that. And I've had this too many years ago. And the best thing I did was to start practicing with people I trusted. So I would go to see a friend and I would say, listen, if you see I'm a bit jittery, I'm just a bit anxious. I've not seen anyone for ages. You know, it's not you, and it will pass in 20 minutes, because it always does. But I don't want you to feel uncomfortable, me being anxious. Is that okay? I'm lucky enough to have friends to just go, yeah, cool. But I'll say this to strangers too. I've said this in professional meetings. I've said it in interviews. I've said, I'm anxious. You know, I'm not apologizing for it. I'm just letting you know, because I don't want you to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I'm just going to let you know. And I think that's the kindest thing you can do for yourself, is to, it's not weakness. It is not weakness. And throw back to the episode, anxiety is not weakness. It is not.
Mm-hmm.
It is strength that you're going toe to toe with mm-hmm. the amygdala and the anxious response, with fear itself. And I think, well, why not just let, you know, if you're practicing with people close to you, just let them know. I say that with the privilege of knowing that people will be all right with me, but I've also worked with mm-hmm. people and know people that don't have very tolerant people. So if you're anxious and you're practicing with social anxiety and people aren't tolerant of it, then don't bother talking to them. You know, if they don't deserve your attention or your company. So
mm-hmm.
try and find someone you can practice with. I've done it when I used to just tell people, and it's really warming when I hear my clients or people I just generally chat to, and they've said, you know what, I told my mum and dad I was anxious, and they were shocked and things, but actually the pressure was off. You know, the pressure was off trying to be someone I'm not. Yeah, like it's, you're not your anxiety, but at the same time, just be honest, like, I'm really anxious, because it's more awkward when you're hiding it.
Absolutely. Wow, it's such a simple solution, and albeit, as you say, it takes a lot of courage, and it might only work with certain people, but man, you're so right that once you just say it, then it can just break down a huge wall, or more like you've put down a big bag that you didn't realize you've been carrying. It's just oh wow, I'm allowed to be myself right now. I'm allowed to be as anxious as I feel.
Oh, definitely, and own it as well. Own it. It's not a bag. It's not a badge of shame. I say to people, I say, they'll say, are you all right, Josh? You seem a bit fidgety. I was like, I'm having a panic at the moment, but it'll pass. And they're like, all right, cool. So when I start shifting and tensing and, you know, taking deep breaths and stuff, they're not even that bothered, because they know what's going on. But if you're trying to hide it like it's some shameful thing, don't. And I think that's one of the best things that you can do with social anxiety. And it's not forever either. Once you take the pressure off and you start showing the amygdala that it's not dangerous, and if you're in personal therapy and looking to look at your kind of self-esteem kind of thing, and looking at kind of how you value yourself, whether it's an internal organismic valuing process or external, then, you know, that's for stuff for you to take responsibility for, to look at. But from a cognitive kind of behavioural point of view, just make things easier for yourself. That's what I say to a lot of my clients, and it works quite successfully.
I think that's a great note to end things on, because it's a lot of practical tips there. I quizzed you on, you know, my tactic that... I wanted to kind of pick apart, and we did. And
I'm so
going
to do that now. I'm so going to pretend to be someone else in my next social engagement. Well, actually, probably not, because we're on lockdown as we currently record this episode. But yeah, when we're allowed to
again. When the shops are back open again, I would recommend trying it at a shop that you never go to most of the time. If you're in a new neighborhood or something,
yeah,
just be like, what would happen if I was this different person when I walked into this shop?
Yeah.
No harm done. They don't know that you're putting on a Canadian accent or whatever it might be. That's, I don't know. We'll see.
Definitely going to
we'll
do
we'll give
that.
Updates on
I'm Ella's, definitely going to
Ella's
do
weird ideas and how they ping off of the one who's been to university for this.
Oh,
so,
definitely.
So that's beautiful. Thanks so much for those references as well to reading that you've done. I'll make sure to put those in the show notes. And congrats on 10 episodes, buddy. This has gone well.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. You're brilliant and the best co-host ever. I think as well, as we move forward, I can't say the word move forward, it sounds so cool. As things progress and we continue making lovely podcasts, we're going to start getting some guests on as well, which will be really nice. I've had some interest from some people. And also, more importantly than guests, our listeners, please feel free to send in the emails. It's talk@thepanicroom.co.uk. talk@thepanicroom.co.uk. And just like last week, we read one out and we would love to answer them. If we get enough, we'll just dedicate all episodes to doing a Q&A.
Brilliant.
Yeah, whilst we're there here as well on 10 episodes, feel free to give my page a follow on Instagram, which is Joshua Fletcher Author, or Facebook, which is Joshua Fletcher Author something something. But also the extremely talented Ella Jean has got some excellent music. Where do they go to follow you, Ella?
Yeah, so I'm also on Instagram. Ella of the Net is my handle, and everything else my life wise is at ellaofthe.net. And if you want to check out some more podcasts, if you happen to be in a sort of situation where you're stuck at home or need something for your transport, please check out mysteryplanet.net. That's the production behind the Panic Pod.
Yes.
We're in a great family. So wicked.
Brilliant. You have a lovely day, Ella, and I'll catch you soon.
Talk to you soon, Josh. Bye.
Bye-bye.